Many female musicians have graduated music school only to find there are key elements that sabotage their success. To find out more, visit 31successsecrets.com.
Welcome to Female Musician Online, the podcast that shows women in music how to succeed in today's male-dominated music industry. If you are a female singer, songwriter, or female instrumentalist, this information will empower you to overcome the many challenges facing you in your musical career. This podcast is brought to you by FemaleMusicianOnline.com.
Today I'll be interviewing Leandra Ram, world-renowned classical crossover singer and accomplished actor and dancer. She has fantastic advice on being interviewed for live radio, as well as what it's like living on the road. Later, we delve into things to watch out for in the music industry when dealing with men from different cultures.
All right. Hello, and welcome to Female Musician Online once again. I am here with Leandra Ram from New York City. She is a classical crossover singer, and we're going to explain exactly what that is as we go along. And we will be discussing many things, and one of them particularly is performing situations and how to overcome them in dealing with people. So we'll start by getting your background and what you've been doing all these many years, and education, maybe start with that.
Well, I've been singing my whole life. My mom said I sang before I spoke. And it just sort of came natural to me. I played piano and flute. And my mom is a pianist and dancer herself, so I was surrounded by music growing up. I heard classical music all over the house all the time. My sister and I would just dance, like improv to Chopin and Mozart. We would just hear it and express ourselves through the arts as we were growing up. And when I was about 14, I was in a children's choir, and they spotted me out as having an exceptional voice, and they said, you should take voice lessons. You should take classical voice lessons. Because up to that point, I was doing musical theater. Starting from like the second grade, I was performing in my community musicals. And then I was 14, and they said, you should take private classical lessons because you have a really nice upper register, which means like the higher notes.
Which I've heard you do, yes.
Right. And so I took lessons, and I just really felt like my voice fit classical music really well. So ever since that time, I've been training as a classical singer. And I went to Manhattan School of Music, both for high school, they have a preparatory division, and for college. And now what I'm doing is classical crossover, which you mentioned.
Yes, but you can explain what that is.
Right.
To people who aren't familiar. Yeah.
Which is bridging classical music and other musics together. So taking all these different genres and putting it into one. So I'm using my classical voice, my classical technique, but I also sing musical theater, I also sing pop, and I sing a lot of popra, even my own original music. Like my latest song is I'm taking the opera Carmen, and I'm taking the famous Habanera and putting it to a pop beat, but I'm still singing it with my classical technique and my classical voice.
Right. So classical popra versus classical crossover, is there a difference in those terms?
Or pretty much the same thing.
Okay.
Yeah.
So, but usually, from what I understood, is when you're taking classical and you're crossing it over, it's generally pop music, though, isn't it? From a classical and pop. It's not going to be the classical and grunge or alternative.
Right.
It's going to be classical. I mean, maybe it is, but at this point, it's mostly into the pop genre.
Right. Or musical theater.
Or musical theater. Right. Right. Okay. And how about talking about some of your experience performing-wise, what you've been doing? Because you've done some musical theater as well, right, in New York?
My first professional job as a classical singer was with Sarasota Opera, and I was 21, and I did their apprentice program. Then immediately after that, I went to Des Moines Metro Opera and did their young artist program. Then literally immediately after that, I went to Aqua Carolina. Then I went to Toledo Opera. Then I went to Arizona Opera. So I did 5 young artist programs at a very young age, between 21 and 23.
Good for you.
And then after that, I started doing a few more musical theater like lead roles. I was Antonia in Man of La Mancha in California. I was Estelle in the Full Monty with the Meteor Theater.
Yeah,
in Pennsylvania.
Oh, good.
And then I was in Hell's Kitchen, the musical, which was an off-Broadway show in Manhattan. So, yeah, I've done a lot of both musical theater and opera.
Right. So when they say off-Broadway, it means you're doing a musical which is not in New York. Broadway, is that, I don't really know what that term
is. Well, it's still in Manhattan.
Okay.
It's still, it's not on the, you know, the strip, where you would say, like on Broadway.
Okay, so.
But it's still very, you know, nice theater and you're still performing for, you know, Manhattan audiences, the same audiences
right.
that would come to Broadway shows.
So off-Broadway, those will still encompasses New York? Or
yes.
Can an off-Broadway be in Toronto? Or because we have musicals there.
No, they'd okay. have to be in New York. You would call that regional theater.
Oh, good.
Yeah.
Okay. I
so, like, if I did, like, the show that I did in Philadelphia, the Full Monty,
yes.
that's considered regional theater.
Got it. Yeah. Well, that's interesting.
But anything in Manhattan is either Broadway, off-Broadway, off-off-Broadway, or off-off-off.
Right.
Broadway. Just depending on the company's budget, the location, union status, all of that.
Right. And what about acting? Have you done any, have you studied acting or do you, because I know you
yeah.
do some of that in Broadway, obviously,
mm-hmm.
when you're in musicals, I should say.
Right.
And then did you study acting as well?
Yes. Growing up, I studied acting. Just it came natural to me as well.
Oh, good.
But now I study method acting, and I use that to, you know, help me portray the characters that I'm singing. Most of my work, though, is in musical theater or opera. I really don't do that much straight acting, although I would like to.
Mm-hmm.
But I use my technique in all of the singing that I do.
Right.
And I've trained privately with coaches as well.
Oh, good. Good. And you've also had your 15 Minutes of Fame.
Right.
which is not necessarily musical, but an interesting story that you told me
yeah.
about. So
sort of off the beam.
Yeah, off the, yeah, yeah. Go ahead. Mention what it is.
It's well, it's very interesting. It's very different. I was born a very unique way. I was born from the repository for germinal choice because my parents were not able to have children. My father is infertile. So my grandmother was actually watching the Donahue show back in the 80s, and this is what I heard through my family. And she was flipping through the channels. She came across the Donahue show, and there was a little boy that was born from this sperm bank, and he was beautiful, blonde hair, blue eyes, really intelligent, had an IQ off the charts, and they said he was born from this sperm bank because his family couldn't have children. So my grandmother called up my mom, and she said, oh, my God, I found the answer for you. You don't have to adopt. I know what you should do. So then my parents looked into it, and it was great because back then they didn't really have a lot of screening for donors.
Mm.
You know, back in the 80s, they weren't really, you know,
it was a new business, really.
Yeah, yeah. So, like, sperm donors could just be some random person that they just, you know,
right.
So this was a really new idea because you could actually select the donor. And you can know about them, what their heritage is, what they look like. How
this particular program
this
was,
particular
right,
program.
Okay.
Right. So my mom paid, I think, $2.95 for shipping and handling. That's all it cost. It was totally a free
You're
thing.
You're a cheap baby.
And they flew
wow.
it from San Diego, I think it was.
Oh, that's amazing.
To New York.
All right.
And then here I am.
Mail order sperm. I love
right.
that. I love
so
that.
I don't know who the donor is. I never
right,
find out.
Right, you don't find out. Okay.
But I know he was a scientist. And
so you're scientific? Are you scientific, I should say? I don't know if that's the right term. But
no, not
you're,
really,
more, you're
yeah.
more artsy.
Yeah.
Took the artsy side of him.
Yeah.
Right. Wow. That's very interesting. I don't
yeah.
know too many people
yeah.
who've had that experience.
So I was on some TV shows.
Right.
There was a book that came out that was called The Genius Factory
okay.
by David Plotz. And this book talks about everything that happened and the whole phenomenon of this sperm bank. And that book came out in 2006. And because of that, I went on some TV shows. I was on Anderson Cooper 360 on CNN. I was on 60 Minutes. The View, Good Morning America.
Well, good for you.
Yeah, so it was fun.
Wow.
I got to tell my story.
Yes.
Like I'm telling it.
Yeah. And it's preparing you for when you get the chance to do other interviews and stuff or whenever they come up,
mm-hmm.
right? Have you ever done anything internet radio or?
Not yet.
Okay, because that's a good avenue to take. People listen mm-hmm. to that.
Oh, but I have been on some radio stations that you can
okay.
hear over the web.
Oh, good.
In North Carolina, I was on the radio, and I did an interview as well I can't remember the station at the moment, but it's on my website. And I also was in a radio station in Toledo, Ohio, where I sang two live performances.
Oh, good. Nice.
So those are both, you can hear it on the web.
So what, in, just in talking about that, what is your recommendation to people who end up doing live radio? Because that is a whole different thing than if you're not in your, you're not in your own comfort zone.
Mm-hmm. How did you performing live?
Yeah, performing live. Because I've done, I haven't performed live on radio. I've done interviews on radio, but I haven't performed. So I just wanted to ask what you thought of that.
Yeah, I basically treated it as if it was a live performance. That there was no second chances, you can't mess up, you just have to do it. And having that pressure actually forces you to do a, your best, you know, because you know subconsciously and consciously that you don't get another take. This is your only take.
Yes.
So you just have to keep going. And if you make a little mistake, you just have to just keep going. And it's funny because just knowing that changes the way that you perform.
It raises the bar a bit.
Yeah.
And I always recommend to people, to women, like to get out there and to do live radio. If it's for singing or just to even go and speak about stuff that they're working on.
Because
it's, because like you said, there's no second chances and you have to really be on the ball when you're doing it. And it's a great experience. It's a great experience, as you know, to get to take auditions or interviews on anything because it just helps you in your career overall. Even if it's a small interview or done in a very regional area, anything you can do to kind of get yourself in front of the camera, in front of a speaker or anything is great because it's a stepping stone to something else, I believe. And makes you more comfortable when you're having to deal with the bigger things. Because also you don't want to be having to do a big thing all of a sudden, you're thrown in front of the limelight if you haven't warmed up to all these things.
Exactly.
Yeah, so it's a good idea.
Yeah.
Well, why don't you discuss, you said something about some educational stuff you've done as well, right?
Right. When I was performing with those opera companies I mentioned, I did a lot of educational outreach tours, which means we went to elementary schools, middle schools, high schools, and we performed for them, for the kids.
Okay.
So we would wake up sometimes 5 or 6 in the morning, we'd get in a little van, we'd drive 2 hours somewhere else, in another city.
Out of New York? It's from based from New York?
No, no. These programs were in North Carolina, Ohio, Arizona. I think those were the three. Yeah, those were the three that were outreach programs.
Were you always coming back, or were you on tour for a bit while you were?
It changed. Each program had their own schedule. But like a good example would be, you know, you'd wake up in the morning, you'd drive a few hours, put the set together yourself, perform, take the set down, drive another 30 minutes to another school. Put the set up.
Were you putting the sets up? Okay.
The actor for
Well, that's good experience though, because you don't always have people who do that for you.
Right.
Right.
So then we would do the show, take the set down, and then either drive back to our base or drive to another city, spend the night in a hotel, and then do it all over again the next day.
And what was it like working with these the teams of people? Or first of all, how many people were you working with at the time?
It was a very small group, four.
Okay.
Four singers.
Girls and guys?
Yeah, two girls, two guys.
Okay.
And a driver, which is also was the stage manager.
I think we doubled up on something.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
So it was basically just five of us. So it can be a little difficult to be in such
small, and what were your experiences with that? Some of the things you can share.
Well, we all got along, but it could be tough at times, you know, when you're only seeing those four people. You know, that's that's all you see for sometimes 6 months on end. And I got a best friend out of it, one of my best friends.
Oh, nice.
Was one of the other female singers. But sometimes, you know, you'd have little arguments, and everyone's just on edge sometimes because you're in such close quarters.
Yes, and you get on each other's nerves.
Right.
Are you, and you, were you traveling in a small van or like a bus? Or
it was like a 12-seat van.
Right. So your personal space, I find when your personal space is continually being invaded, you can get a little, you know, edgy.
Right.
But you learn to adapt as well, right? You learn that it's not, I don't have the freedom of everyday space, if you want to call it, and you learn how to adapt, and generally you find that everybody adapts as well.
Yeah.
Right? You just hope that everybody has good hygiene.
Right.
Yeah, no problem, yeah.
I learned a lot from it, from being in such close quarters. It really teaches you how to be a good colleague, you know, and how to not let these little things get to you, you know? Mm-hmm. So now I always incorporate that whenever I start a new show. I always try and do the best colleague, because you never want to have problems, you know, with your cast members. You always want to get along and not let the situation take over.
Right, and that's a very mature attitude, because not everybody handles situations mm-hmm. as well. Or some people really wear their hearts on their sleeve and take mm-hmm. everything personal, or unfortunately, and I hate to use the term catty, but that is what ends yeah. up happening sometimes. And did you run into anything like that?
Yes. Yeah. Especially in some of the bigger casts that I've worked in. Not okay. so much in the smaller groups, because it's just so small mm-hmm. that it's one of those
everybody deals.
Yeah. yeah. But in larger groups, yes. There's definitely, you can find, especially if you're in a cast of like 20 people, you can find little cliques forming and people gossiping and talking.
Right.
And you really just have to look the other way. You have to just not get involved. That's what I've noticed. Because when you start getting involved and you start wondering, what does he think of me? What does she think of me? Oh my God, what are they saying? Then it's just, you're digging yourself in a deeper hole. So I noticed, because I had that a lot. I was in some companies where there was a lot of gossip. And at first, I was, like, so concerned. I was like, what is everyone saying, you know?
Right.
And I started getting involved. I started gossiping a little bit.
Yeah, it's kind of human nature, right?
And then now I'm like, you can't. You just have to focus on your work. Mm-hmm. Focus on, you know, making friends, but not getting involved, like, with all that stuff.
Right. Right. And so when you have, let's take an example. If you have an issue where somebody's coming up and starting to talk about somebody else, how do you go about doing it? Because how do you go? Yeah, because you also want to, you don't want to shun people. You're trying to make friends with as well. Mm-hmm. You want to keep those friendships going, right?
Right.
So,
well, you try and change the subject.
Yeah.
I would say if somebody said, "Oh, well, did you hear that so and so is doing this, and so and so is dating that, and so that," you can just say, "Well, yeah, I did hear about that. By the way, let's order our food." You know, if you're at a restaurant,
good.
You just sort of change the subject. You can talk about it a little bit, but when it
right.
gets to the point where your gut is telling you, okay, now I'm gossiping, now I'm talking badly about people, now I'm
right.
judging people's abilities, especially people say, "That girl has such a bad voice, why did she get hired?" You don't want to get involved with that, you know. You just say, "I don't know, I guess, you know, she was meant for the part, or else she wouldn't have gotten cast."
Right.
And then you just try and redirect the conversation. You have to teach people how to treat you. You know, teach them that you're not interested in that type of conversation.
Right. And I have found, too, when you do that, generally people will go, okay, I don't have a green light here, and they won't
right.
bring stuff up. Or they'll know that they can't go to you to dump all their laundry.
Exactly.
Their
they'll go to someone
laundry.
Else who's willing to.
Yes. And did you have you been caught in a situation where stuff got back to you and it kind of about yourself? Have you ever had that happen?
Yeah.
Right. And how did you deal with that?
Because
this is a common thing, and that's
yeah,
why I'm bringing it up, right?
It's hurtful, you know, especially
yeah.
with women, if you hear other women say, because it really doesn't happen as much in my experience with men. I've noticed other women will say things about you, and I've heard
yes.
somebody say something about me before, and it was really hurtful, and I was 21 at the time. And I was really like, oh my God, I can't believe they would say that. You know, I was really, really
mm-hmm.
hurt. But now, at 25, if that were to happen, I would just be like, ugh, whatever. You
right.
know, I wouldn't even give it the time of day. But back then, I really thought about it. I was like pondering it for like a few days. I was like, I can't believe they said that. Why? I wonder if everyone thinks that way about me. Gosh. You know, and I like would really question if that was true even.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Mm-hmm. Well, and this is the thing about when you hear people say things. It is good to say, is there some truth to it? Because sometimes there is a little bit of truth in everything we hear, or maybe we have a blind spot.
But it could also be jealousy.
And that is the other thing, too. And generally, even if it is a truth, it's sprung up from jealousy.
Yes.
Right?
Or exaggerated truth.
Yes, exaggerated. Right, exaggerated truth. I agree on that. So I have found when I've heard people say things about me, I've same thing, this stuff would get back to me. And it would be very hurtful, and I would say, okay, well, is there maybe some truth to what I'm hearing?
Mm-hmm.
And try and evaluate the situation, okay? I'm either this person's jealous, or there is some truth, or both.
Yeah.
Or both. And then try and maybe, for me, I always think, because we all have blind spots, at times it's hard to know what our blind spots are, and sometimes it's a little window of opportunity to find out maybe what some of our blind spots are,
mm-hmm.
and we can look at them and go, I wonder if there is truth to this. And then ask somebody else if it's a real big deal.
Yeah, that's true.
But I do like the attitude of having a tough skin, and I think in this business you do have to have a tough skin. Like
yeah.
you do. And I don't mean tough to be like nasty tough. But
thick
I like
skin.
Yeah, right. You have a thick skin and you have to let things just kind of, you know,
roll off
you.
Yeah.
Yeah, and then just move on.
It's difficult, though. It takes a lot of experiences to get. I'm not even where I want to be yet.
Yeah.
You know, I want to even have a thicker skin. Especially, you know, if you get a bad review or if, you know, you have a bad performance one night. I mean, those kind of things happen all the time. And you really have to just learn to just brush it off. And as a young woman especially, it's very difficult. Because,
mm-hmm.
you know, I'm emotional. Like, most women are a little sensitive to
of
that.
Of course.
You know, if you have a bad performance.
Even guys, they just don't show as much.
Right.
Right.
And so if you have a bad performance one night, you can really feel down on yourself. And I'm teaching myself more and more to just be like, there's another one tomorrow. I'm just going to do it tomorrow. But I still get affected, you know. So I'm still in the learning process. But I know where I want to be.
Well, I'm sure you've had good reviews. Have you ever had something where a bad review has come across your path and you've had to kind of deal with it, like a specific...
Yeah, I had a slightly unfavorable review. I was sick and I sang anyway. I performed.
Right.
I had one chance to perform. It was a one-night performance. And I didn't get a second chance. It was either to go and all the rehearsals, you know, and just perform or just waste everything.
Wow.
So I made the choice to perform, even though I was sick. And I did okay, considering I was sick.
Right.
You can still tell I was sick.
Mm-hmm.
The reviewer didn't know that I was sick.
Right.
So the reviewer, you know, wasn't as complimentary. But, you know, I made the choice, you know. I was like, I'm going to
And you
perform.
Dealt with it.
Yeah.
If you hadn't sung, you would have felt a lot worse, I'm sure.
I would have.
Because now
and
you
then
can...
I would have always wondered, like, I wonder what would have happened.
Yeah. I think you made the right choice to do it. If you're well enough, or if you're feeling confident enough to get up and do it, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I'm of the same persuasion that in 10 years from now, I better look back and think that I'm better than at that point than I am now, which means that what I am now, it's going to be rough sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I know, like, when I'm performing, and especially since I play jazz and improvise guitar, it's on the fly all the time. So there's a good chance when I'm performing and I'm playing, because it's somewhat, experimental is not the right word, but improvisation is definitely, you're just playing and you're playing as you're thinking, that I make mistakes and I'm like, oh, well, that sounded really dumb. But I just kind of keep going, and sometimes people catch it, sometimes people don't. But if I got nervous about it, and I have done that in the past when I was first trying to improvise on the guitar, because you're stumbling over stuff, that I would make mistakes, and then it got worse because I would get in fear.
Mm-hmm.
And to me, I think, you know, if somebody passed a review about me, well, they're not going to remember that review in 5-6 years anyways, or
right.
even 2 months. People move on and go to something else. And everybody knows that you're growing, you're developing. And I had to take the same attitude, like, I still got another performance, or whatever, I had a bad night tonight, like, what is wrong with me?
Yeah.
I had a night like that just the other night. I was performing, and I'm playing, I'm like, I just can't seem to get any notes out right.
Mm.
And then I didn't let it bother me. Before, it would bother me. This time, I didn't let it bother me, and then it was the next set, it was fine, because I had a few sets that night. And I just played, it was like, okay, that was over. But if you bring attention to it, like, your mind brings attention, it actually can create a real fear in your performances as you go along.
Yeah, that's true.
And then you have to overcome those kind of obstacles. But I'm sure you've overcome stuff like that.
Mm-hmm. But I also think that if you start thinking about it, then your thought becomes reality.
I agree.
So if you start thinking, oh my God, that was terrible, what am I doing, that was awful, and you keep repeating that negative mental thought,
mm-hmm.
then it actually, in my opinion, changes the way that your performance actually went.
Yes.
Then people start feeling that energy and they say, yeah, she really wasn't that good, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas if you think positive thoughts and you say, I did my best, I'm human, you know.
Right.
I had 20 good nights in a row, I had one bad night. You know, then people's opinion, even though you're not saying, they can feel that, you know.
Mm-hmm. It's really the law of attraction that we're hearing
exactly.
so much about these days.
Oh, it's so true.
Yeah.
The Secret, that's exactly what
There's the proverb, whatever, scripture, as a man thinketh, which is, as a man thinketh, so is he. So if you're
mm-hmm.
perceiving yourself, like you said, negatively, then that's how you're being perceived by everybody. But if you're seeing yourself as, okay, I had a bad night, no big deal, I'll move on. If you keep making mistakes and go, okay, what am I missing here? I need to fix something. Then that's okay. Okay, it's just something that I need to fix.
Mm-hmm.
Something that maybe I'm not covering this technique well enough, or maybe I need to take a lesson on this. Or I know, like for guitar, there's some areas where I needed to, like, because there's technique for both different hands. There's a picking technique on this hand, and then, you know, technical on your left hand.
Okay.
And there was a certain sound I didn't like, and I kept trying to figure out what it was. Eventually, just by digging in, I discovered what it was.
Mm.
And the same thing with my voice. If there's times when I wouldn't be singing for a while, and when I get back singing, I'm like, oh, my voice is not as on top as I'd like. Well, of course, I took a whole bunch of time off. But I realized what it was, and then I did some more warming up and got over it.
Right.
Rather than getting down on myself, because I'm totally in agreement with you that you can really get in a dark space.
You can. And you can really start to affect your career, you know?
Absolutely.
If you start thinking like that, even though when people come up to you and they shake your hand, they can feel if you're a little bit like, oh, well, thank you, but you're thinking, God, I was terrible.
Yeah.
You know? It can really affect you.
Well, and this is also something, too, because women generally are taught to be more humble than men. And men are taught to just, you know, exude this confidence. But if you're a professional musician, you need to exude confidence all the time.
Right.
It's not conceit. It's just when people come and thank you and say, oh, you did a great job, you don't make an excuse. Because I've seen people do this. I'm like, what are you doing? And, oh, I did okay. It's like, never mind. In their eyes, you did great. And you don't need to...
Because then you're insulting their opinion.
Absolutely. Yes, absolutely. And you need to say thank you very much. And meanwhile, you're thinking, I really sucked. But it doesn't matter, right? Or not anyway, I really sucked, but that wasn't that great tonight, my performance. But you definitely need to exude confidence. So when always exude confidence, because it's a law of attraction, like you said.
Yes.
You know? And do you have a lot of people coming to you after your performances? And like, do you have an open situation like that where you're chatting with people who've seen you?
Yes, I do.
Yeah. And so maybe you can talk more about dealing with after performances and how you deal with your audience who are coming to speak with you. And
I try
some techniques and stuff.
Yeah, I try and be really friendly and, you know, shake everyone's hand. And if somebody says to me any positive comment, I always say thank you. I used to do what you said. I used to, sometimes if I didn't think I did so well, I used to be like, oh, well, it wasn't my best night, but thank you so much.
Right.
And now it's like,
it's a no-no.
You don't do that.
It's a sign of amateurism, I hate to say, but it is.
It really is. So now I just say thank you very much, no matter how bad I thought I did or how great I thought I did. It's always the same answer. And I, you know, just really friendly. And if someone says something, you know, inappropriate or negative.
Yeah, okay, let's talk about that, too. How do you deal with that?
You just have to be really professional, you know, and you just have to say, well, thank you for your opinion. I appreciate it. You know,
right.
You don't want to get in fights or get into some sort of quarrel. You just say, I appreciate your advice. Thank you.
Right. I find sometimes, too, people who maybe know a little bit about music, right, want to let you know that they know something.
Yeah.
So they come and become the critic.
Mm-hmm.
And really, they're just showing off.
Right.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
You know, I've had people do things like, this has happened not so much now, but several years ago. Many times I'd be performing in bars. I don't play too much bars now, but in the bar scene, I'd have some guy start talking to me.
Mm-hmm.
And blah, 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 blah. Next thing you know, within 5 minutes of conversation, start giving me advice on something.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, you know, I don't know. He's like, you're friendly to them, so they suddenly feel it's a door to come in and say
right.
stuff. And some of the stuff would be okay. Some of the stuff was not. And I think sometimes it's just they're trying to show you that they know something about whatever it is.
Yeah.
And they're kind of showing off. And you have to take that in perspective, too. Sometimes they're just being cocky or arrogant. Or they want to let you know that they know something.
Right.
Like, oh, I didn't like your technique and da-da-da-da, or... Right. And I like your approach, being gracious to people and just saying, well, thank you very much.
Mm-hmm.
But I really think you're an idiot. No, I'm just kidding.
Right.
No, yeah. I'm just teasing. But yeah, and being gracious to people and being kind and rising above.
Yeah.
Right? And not letting those kind of things affect you.
Right.
And not letting it, like you said, start thinking about it, because it can bring a negative vibe into your performances, right, if you're thinking.
And it's funny because I think as humans, we naturally retain negative comments more than we do positive.
Mm-hmm.
If you're standing there and 50 people tell you how wonderful you are, and then one person says something like, oh, that wasn't your best night tonight, or something, you're going to remember that, and you're going to forget about all the 50 positive, because that's just
right.
human nature, and you're going to start thinking, oh my God, that one person said that, and you forget about the 50 wonderful comments that you had. You know,
yes.
So it's almost like you're fighting against your instincts, you know, and you just have to fight it and just say, that's one person. I had 50 people who told me I was wonderful.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you have to remember those 50, not that one.
Mm-hmm. Well, and I also think when I'm performing, generally people who are not musicians or who are just the general public, people will like to come up to you and talk to you and compliment you.
Mm-hmm.
And every once in a while, somebody comes out and says something really specific, either good or bad. Those are the comments that I listen to.
Me too, yeah.
Because
that sticks also.
Yes, because sometimes somebody, like you're performing at a great performance and they caught something and it's kind of intangible. They don't really know what it is because music is an intangible thing.
Mm-hmm.
And they might say, you know, when you sang such and such, I just felt like, wow, it really touched me. And I have stuff like that happen sometimes, and I'm like, what was it? I want to retain that comment because they're
mm-hmm.
trying to be specific, but they don't really know. They're not.
Yeah.
They don't know what the right words are.
Mm-hmm.
So I find those kind of things are good to pay attention to because sometimes those are the things that are going to guide you or lead you into your natural areas that you're actually doing. How do I say exceptional in
mm-hmm.
that you may not know. But if somebody
right.
brings light to it, then you're like, okay, is this something that I've touched in my ability that is actually something I need to bring out more
mm-hmm.
in my performances,
yeah.
right? And again, about blind spots, maybe somebody does say something, maybe they have a point, or maybe they're just not very nice people, like,
right.
you know? So it's good to pay attention.
Yeah. One of the most memorable comments I had was when somebody came up to me after a performance, and they said, it was a woman, she was so sincere. She just looked
mm-hmm.
me in the eyes and hold my hand, and she was like, the way that you sang on my own just brought me to tears.
Right.
Like I was crying. I saw the Broadway production. The way you sang it was just blow every production I've heard off the charts. You just really touched me. And she was so specific, and I just
right.
was so humbled. I was like, thank you so much.
Wow.
And I'll never forget that, because
right.
I know that it really meant a lot to her.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
When I think of sometimes entertainers performance, we forget what it's like to not be, to be the audience.
Mm-hmm.
And to watch a spectacular performance. You kind of, I mean, we're performing all the time, so we forget what it's like to be from their end and,
yeah.
and view it and how people get touched.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Well, what I think of a lot of times is when I was really young and I went to shows and how that inspired
mm-hmm.
me. You know, I would remember seeing Cats, you know, when I was 10, and I was just like, I want to do that. Or when
really?
I saw the Nutcracker when I was 8.
Is that what did it? Those, yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I saw Carmen. I saw the opera Carmen. I was like 15.
Wow.
And I was just like, just so inspired. I was like, I want to do that. You know, and so I remember that's what it's like to be in the audience.
Yes.
Just, have that inspiring feeling. So when I perform, I try never to give half, you know, or do a 75% show. I try to always give 100%.
Good for you.
There might be that girl in the audience that's 11. You know,
mm-hmm.
that you can't see, but she's up in the balcony on the fifth row with her mom. And if you give 100%, that might inspire her to actually be a singer one day. You know?
That's great. That's great advice. You're right, though. We all have those moments where some moment, something happened, we were making a life decision. You're
yeah.
like, I'm going to pursue this. Or this is something I really, really want to do. And then it might have been the first time, like a seed. And then as you go on, another seed happens. And you're like, yeah, I want to do this. This is what I want to do.
The opposite happened to me as well, though. I was playing the flute. And I was deciding what I wanted to do with my life, you know, because I love to sing, but I also love to act. I love to play the piano. I love to play the flute. And I wasn't exactly sure
mm-hmm.
what specific path I wanted to take. I knew I wanted to be in the arts. And I knew that singing was really my primary love, but I still had all these other passions. I think it was around that same time, I was like 14, 15, I was playing the flute, I was, you know, practicing all the time. I went to see a recital of a famous flute player, and after the recital, I was so, like, in awe of her. And I just went up to her, and I was like, you're amazing. I was like, the way that you played that last piece was just so beautiful, and I play that too, that's what I'm studying now too. And she was so rude, and I'll never forget this.
Wow.
And she said to me, she was like, well, that's nice that you play that too, and walked away.
How old were you at that age?
I was about 14 or 15.
Yeah, so she saw, who do you think you are? Some young girl coming and telling you play your...
But that had an impact on me.
Right.
It really did.
Wow.
Because I was like, I really felt like smashed to the floor at that moment from someone that I looked up to.
Mm-hmm.
So you can be so... you can have such an impact on someone's life, and you may not even meet them, you may not never know, but just by talking to someone or performing, you know, you can really affect people's decisions, you know?
Right.
So that's why it's so important, I feel. That's why I always give 100%, and I always try and be so nice, you know, because you never know, that could be that one girl that
mm-hmm.
will be that famous singer 30 years from now.
Right. And she, from her point of view, she's like, she was viewing it almost in a condescending way, because she was a lot older, I'm assuming,
mm-hmm.
that here's this 14-year-old girl saying she's playing the same stuff as me.
Right.
Meanwhile, you were saying in an admirable way.
Yeah.
And she just interpreted it completely wrong. Did,
right.
did that affect your decision?
Maybe subconsciously, yeah. I think I chose singing, though, just because that's
what you really
what
liked.
I really, really
yeah.
love to do. I was, I think, naturally headed in that direction anyway.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm sure subconsciously it had some sort of effect, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, that's very important. And sometimes when you're performing or you meet people, you don't realize they're young people and they are really admiring you.
Mm-hmm.
I know that because there's not tons of female guitarists around. Now, there are. There's more and more, but they're just not really out there a lot.
Okay.
I've had a lot of young girls come up to me just in men, you know, over time, and like, wow, you play the guitar. Now, when I have guys come up to me, it's kind of like, oh, you're a girl who plays guitar. Wow, I didn't, because they have, it's more of a, I didn't know girls could play guitar. It's a condescending thing.
Yeah.
They're not always meaning it condescendingly, but they're like, oh, because they always see guys play guitar. But when I have a young girl come up to me and say something about you play guitar, it's more of an admirational thing.
Mm-hmm.
So I kind of deal with, not that I don't really deal with it differently. When men say something, I know sometimes they're trying to give me a compliment, and it comes across as a double.
Yeah.
You know, like, well, you're good for a guitar. You're good for a girl.
Yeah.
It's kind of what they say. And I go, well, thank you. I get that quite a bit. But when a young girl comes up to me, I realize that she's kind of like, wow, I can do this too.
Mm-hmm.
To me, that's a huge compliment.
Yeah.
Because I think, yes, you do not have to just play girl instruments, which is fine, but you can also choose other instruments, drums.
Mm-hmm.
I've seen girls play drums, and you know, there's more and more of us coming out.
Yeah.
And so you're right, because at that age, people are making decisions in their life.
Exactly.
If they're feeling compelled, if they're feeling they're artistic
mm-hmm.
and stuff.
Right.
So
did
it's important.
Did you see the Michael Jackson movie, This Is It?
I haven't seen it, no.
Okay. There's an amazing female.
I know.
You've heard of her.
Yeah, I've seen pictures of her, yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
I'm sure that was really inspiring to a lot of young girls.
Yes.
I was inspired. I was like, wow, look at her. You
yeah.
know?
And Prince used to have female guitarists as well.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. I've met a lot of female, great female guitarists. There's just
mm-hmm.
not as many, and the media doesn't shine a light on them for some strange reason.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but it's changing.
Yeah.
You know, things are changing. But anyways, maybe some other points you might have as far as things you've run into that you've overcome, either dealing with men.
Mm-hmm.
Do you have anything? I know we talked about some things with women. What about some guy issues that you've had to deal with in the business?
Yeah. Okay, well, about that, I would say my advice to women that are working in theaters, and especially if you're doing one show here and another show here and another show there, don't, what is that famous phrase? Don't eat where you sleep.
Okay, I use that one. Yes.
You know, if you're going to be in a relationship with somebody, stick with that person. You know, I've seen so many people, they're in this relationship and the program ends and they find someone else, and it's just not good to do that, because then you just get into a big mess, you know?
You mean where the guy is still around, you mean?
Or, like, if you're dating someone in a show,
mm-hmm.
and then the show's over, and then you guys both sort of go different ways, and
okay.
then you do another show, and then you might meet someone else. My big advice is just not even to get involved with that. I say, if you're going to date somebody, you know, have it be for long term, you know? Like, don't
just date because it's a situation,
yeah,
is what you mean.
Exactly.
So,
yeah.
and I've talked about that as well. And what are the reasons? Because people ask me,
mm-hmm.
why is that such a problem?
Well, first of all, it could just be for convenience. The other person could be dating you just because you're there. How do you know that when
right.
the program is finished or when the show is finished, you're both never going to talk again, you know? So you have to make sure that that person's in it for the long haul, or in it at least longer than the show is running,
mm-hmm.
you know? So I would say that's the main thing. You have to make sure that the person is really there for you. Because you could just be lonely, you're on the road, and then you meet somebody, and it seems great, but you're not really realizing that if you were at home, would you really be with that person?
Right.
You know,
things change when you're living everyday life to being on the road,
yeah,
and traveling and stuff. Yeah, I think too, there is a little bit of a misconception, but there is sometimes like a double-edged sword to relationships. Some women will use relationships to get ahead in a business.
Yeah.
Movies a big thing. I remember talking to Shirley Jones, which we met a little while ago, and she was talking about how that's how it worked in the film industry. I mean, the girls who basically went and slept around or did stuff moved on and got some roles that she didn't necessarily get.
Yeah.
In the music business, and I've talked to people who work at record companies, that also plays a role. But I always say, you know, the same doors that opened up for you can also close very quickly.
Yeah.
And if that's how you opened them, how do you reopen them once they close?
Yeah, that's so true. And you know what I loved about Shirley Jones is that she didn't do that. She
was
the one actress that didn't sleep with Frank Sinatra. She was the one leading lady.
I didn't either.
That was opposite
no,
to
I know.
Frank.
Yeah.
She was the one that said no. And she still had a huge career. She still worked with him. And, you know, people respect you more, actually. When you're firm on your beliefs, you know what you want. And you
say,
I'm an actress. I'm not just some random person that you can take advantage of. You know?
Right.
I'm an artist and I have my beliefs. And people will respect you for saying no.
I agree.
I think a lot of women, especially young women, they're scared to say no to men, especially. You know, they think, oh, God, I better, you know, give in because this is my career. But you have to realize your career and your personal life are two totally separate things.
I totally agree.
And mixing them is just, it's like mixing, you know, wine with hard liquor, you know. Or maybe that's
don't
the
do
right
it.
Example, but you'll
well,
get sick and throw
that's
up.
Right. You're ending up with a hangover one way or another.
Yeah.
I think, you know, this is a good thing that you really brought up, though. Because today with the way everything's on TV and you see these girls doing all types of stuff, there's this pervasive thought that, oh, you know, I can have sex wherever I want, do whatever I want, and it's not going to cause an effect. But I mean, I work with men all the time. I am around men, like 99% of my time I'm surrounded by guys.
Mm-hmm.
They're not hearing what the guys are saying. I hear stuff about how men are viewing women. It is not the way women are viewing things.
Yeah.
And so young girls, I always say, if you're trying to move ahead and the guy's pressuring you into something, that's all he wants. And so
Exactly. You're
not guaranteed anything on the other side of it anyways.
Right. And if he was really into your career, he wouldn't even talk about that kind of stuff.
That's right.
You know, if there was a director that was thought you were the next Marilyn Monroe, they would only be talking to you about acting.
I agree. And if they're looking for something else, then that's a chance that that's really what they're interested in.
Exactly.
And what you end up doing with this person is only serving this person's purpose. And they're definitely not going to respect you.
Right.
And it's a double-edged sword because people are lonely sometimes when they're on the road or, you know, you are looking for companionship. And you might meet your soulmate. Like, this can't happen. But it is better to err on the side of caution and just to be careful because it can come out and bite you. And I've talked to many people where entire bands or stuff just get broken up over issues like this.
Right.
And it's a reoccurring theme. I have friends who, you know, started dating in bands, and then next thing you know, the band's broken up.
Mm-hmm.
Or if it's all guys and they've been buddies for a long time and the girl joins later, the girl usually ends up having to leave. Or not having to leave, but just it gets so uncomfortable because the guys are talking behind your back, and it's just an unnecessary mess.
Yeah.
You know, so if people can avoid it, it's good to avoid it, and not to use those things thinking they're going, I'm going to get ahead.
Yeah.
They might get you ahead temporarily, but it's no guarantee that it's going to get you what you're really after.
And if you're a true artist and you're good at what you do, that will advance your career. You don't need anything else to advance your career. Yeah, you have to be at the right place at the right time, but that involves going to the right auditions, getting the right agent. That doesn't involve, you know, sleeping around.
Yeah. And I think, too, for women, and my husband says this all the time, you know, women, the power that a woman has is, you know, beauty and your charm and whatever, as long as you're untouchable.
Yeah.
From a guy's point of view, as soon as he's, you know, it's a challenge thing. As soon as the guys got you, then, oh,
challenge
well, whatever.
Over.
Yeah, the
on
challenge
the
is...
next girl.
No, it's unfortunate, but it's the truth. It's the difference between men and women.
And that's why when you see all these music videos of Shakira and Britney and all that, you see them on the screen, you know, being all sexy, but you know that all those guys that are watching are just watching. You know, they're never going to be able to reach out and grab, you know.
It's the people who work with her, you mean?
No, I mean
them?
Like the audience. Like
oh,
just guys in
yes.
the club or whatever, and they see this TV screen of a music video of Shakira being, like,
yes.
incredibly sexy. They're not with Shakira. They're just watching, and it's that untouchable
Absolutely.
Thing that makes it challenging, you know.
Yes.
Knowing that they'll never be with her, but wanting that, you know.
Yes.
And I think what you said is so smart. Like, the same door that you used to open, it's going to close as well. You know,
I've seen
so
it happen
smart.
To people that I know, yeah.
It's just so true.
Yeah.
Just be careful what you get into, because you're going to have to get out of it in some way, you know. So don't get involved in a relationship with someone unless you know that I really want to be with this person, and this person...
And it's possible, too, that that's what happens.
Oh, yeah, totally possible. But you just have to, you know, like, err on the side of caution.
Yeah, and be smart about it.
Yeah.
I have had friends where they've done specific things, and the doors ended up working in reverse for them, or the next big person, big star walked in, or musician or whatever, and then that place was given to them.
Mm-hmm.
Over, you know, they were the big thing before, and and it's unfortunate, but these things happen.
And just one other thing I want to mention about that is, if you're friends with a guy, like if there's a guy actor and you guys are like really good friends, and then one day he says something to you like, I really like you, I want to get in a relationship, be really careful, because if you do that and it doesn't work out, then your friendship
it's gone.
Yeah. And that's happened to me before, actually.
Mm.
And I lost, a really good friend.
I totally agree.
And then, you know, when you look back, you're like, I should have just stayed friends.
Yeah.
Everything would have been perfect if we just stayed friends.
Well, and part of it, too, is as women, we have the ability to retain friendships with guys.
Right, but guys...
It's not the same, and
exactly.
women don't know that. And I know women tell me, no, they're not like that. A guy is a guy, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And I've been married a long time, and so my husband will talk to me about this stuff, and his friends, because I'm married, two guys will say things to me that they may not say to single women, and I'll ask them about this stuff, and they're like, absolutely, if you were once a friend, you cross that line, you can't go back to friendship. It's not impossible.
Mm-hmm.
It's just extremely rare, and it's naive on our part as women to think that it might go back.
Yeah.
If it does, great. But there's more of a chance that it will not go back to a friendship situation
exactly.
once that line's been crossed.
And we think, why not? We're like, why can't
yeah,
we
yeah,
be friends?
I agree.
What's wrong?
I know.
I just want to be your friend. And then they're like, no, that's it, done.
Yeah.
And it's just a different mentality,
A totally different mentality for guys.
Mm-hmm.
It's also, you hear the thing about, you know, if you're working closely with a guy, or somebody of the opposite sex, guy or girl, whatever, if you're a guy working with a girl or whatever, usually somebody always wants to take it to another level.
Yeah.
Not all the time, but sometimes that, or oftentimes it happens.
Mm-hmm.
I'm working with a guy who's a lot younger than me. That's a whole different issue. Like, there's where I could practically be his mother.
Mm-hmm.
But I mean, and it's the same with, I've worked with older men, it was the same thing, because there's none of that there. But if you're around the same age and you're, you know, it's difficult because it's just human nature. You get really close to somebody and you start to really like them, just like them as a friend. And sometimes that person starts to like you more than you like them. And then you've got to deal with the issue.
Yeah.
Yeah. Have you experienced anything where you've been with a guy and they liked you, but you didn't like them back? And it was a friendship?
Yes.
And how'd you deal with that? Because then there's no developing relationship after that.
Right.
How did you maintain it, or did you?
Well, it was a tricky situation, because I was friends with him, a fellow actor, and...
Like buddies, like good friends.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I don't remember exactly how he told me, but he just told me, you know, he liked me and he wanted to take it further. And we were in a program, you know, you don't see the forest from the trees.
Mm-hmm.
And I just sort of gave in. I was like... I guess I like you. You know, I tried to convince myself that I did, but I really didn't.
Oh, this is the guy who you became... Okay, you actually took it to the next level.
I did.
So, right.
But I didn't really... My gut was telling me not to, but I did, just because I was... I said, I guess I like you. I guess, you know, you're attractive and you're nice and you're smart.
You had to convince yourself of it.
I really convinced myself. And the whole time I was like, oh, what am I doing? You know, we should have stayed friends. Mm-hmm. This is so wrong. And it was really that concept of not seeing the forest from the trees. Mm-hmm. I was trapped in a program. You know, I got just influenced by the situation.
Right.
You know?
That's easy to happen.
And then after, you know, I broke it up and I said, I'm sorry. I was like, this is just not working. I was like, you're an amazing person. And as a friend, you're like, I want you to be like my best friend. But we really shouldn't have ever done this. And it really tainted the... We're still friends, mm-hmm. but we lost that, the quality that we had in the beginning, which was just like true friendship.
And why do you think it's that way, except for the fact that it's girls and guys stuff?
I don't know. I think guys are more black and white. I think women are more like, you know, gray, or, you know, you can be more... I don't know exactly how to explain it, but I feel like guys, it's like the door is either open or closed, you know?
Wow, that's good.
And I feel like with women, it's like, oh, we can be friends, it's fine, you know, and we're more forgiving, in my opinion.
That's true.
I think women are much more forgiving, or we'll just say, oh, well, we can just move on, you know, we can just be friends now. But with guys, it's just something about them that it's like, nope, that's it, sorry. You know, I just think they're just more like this.
Well, now that we're talking about that, I remember my husband even telling me something, something about it's, and I may get letters about this, but it's kind of like a guy control issue thing. Mm-hmm. When you're in friendship with a guy, the control is kind of even. You're both friends.
Yeah.
But as soon as you enter into a relationship and it becomes an intimate relationship, there's kind of a thing now where the guy feels the control is in his hand. And I've had my husband and now somebody else tell me that now I'm thinking about it. Where it's almost like you belong to these people. Now, this is a guy thing. Mm. And as women, we don't like to believe that. But, I mean, I'm talking about the way guys think. It's kind of like, okay, now you're mine. And it can't reverse. Because it means that a guy's got to let go of the control or the reins that they've had. And that doesn't really work for them. Yeah, to become friends again.
Uh-huh.
It's already passed where, well, now I've kind of... The challenge is over. Or the conquering thing is over. Or whatever it is that drives guys to that, but it's also, I think, maybe a little bit of the possession thing.
Yeah,
that is in that. That seems that guys tend to cling on to. Not just guys, of course, but I think it's a more of a guy issue there, and so it might be entered to that realm, and they can't really separate that once it's been.
Yeah, crossed. That's true. I think that's true.
Yeah, yeah. But it's an interesting topic.
They can look at you differently. You know, like they looked at you that way as their girlfriend, and then once it's over, they just can't see you as just a friend anymore. Where I think as women are able to separate.
Yeah, yeah, we are, yeah. And going on to the next topic, what about any other issues you've run into with men? Have you had any issues where, like a controlling thing with bosses? Or,
oh, yeah.
Okay, so maybe we can discuss about that a little bit.
I've had a boss that, in my opinion... was much nicer to the men in the cast.
Okay.
And the women, he just was a little bit more subtly. He got away with it because he was very subtle, but he just was not as nice. He would call us out on things that the guys were doing all the time. Like, if we got to rehearsal, let's say, 5 minutes ahead of time, and everyone got there at the same time, he would call out the women, and the men he wouldn't say anything to. So I've had that issue, and it was really difficult to deal with because it's like, how do you tell someone, your boss, to change the way that they're acting? You know, it's not really your place to do that. And I struggled with it for quite a while, and it got to the point where I just couldn't take it anymore. I was like, this is not working. I need to do something.
Mm-hmm.
So we were really butting heads, and it got to the point where we had to have a meeting. And we had a meeting, and surprise,
you and him had a meeting.
Me and him had a meeting. And there was like a person that was monitoring the
situation. Oh, okay, that's good.
And it worked out perfectly. You'd be surprised because I didn't think just talking about it would work it out.
Because
I thought, how am I going to keep my cool? How am I not going to insult him?
Mm-hmm.
You know, it could be ethical or cultural beliefs.
That's right.
You know?
That's an important thing because people don't realize that.
Yeah. So, you know, a lot of women think that, you know, just because guys in America or Canada or whatever are, you know, a lot of them are... grew up treating women with a lot of respect, and a lot of other places in the world, women are not viewed as equals.
Yes,
you know, when you get to a lot of places, women are considered lower than the man.
Mm-hmm.
And so a lot of men from the different parts of the world will treat women differently. Like, I've been to countries before where if I'm with a guy, a friend or whatever, standing next to me, the guy from that country will look at the man and shake the man's hand and not look at me and not acknowledge
mm-hmm.
me at all. Because it's respectful in their culture not to look at you. But as an American, I'm like, that's disrespectful not to
Absolutely.
Look at me and not to shake my hand. So when I got to this meeting with this guy, I was like, how do
that's
I...
That's a whole other topic, yes.
How do I not insult him, his beliefs, his culture, everything? So I thought about it, and I was just really honest, and I just said, I just don't feel like we're getting along. I just don't feel like you respect me.
Good for you,
And I just don't feel that you're being fair to people in the cast. I feel like to the men, you're a lot nicer, and to women, you're, you know, not as respectful. And he had no idea.
Right.
He was like, I'm sorry, I had no idea I was doing that.
Wow.
And he would say, I couldn't believe it. I was like, you have no idea? I guess it was so embedded
mm-hmm.
in him that...
That's a good way of putting it. It's embedded.
And he was like, I'm really sorry. He was like, I didn't know that was affecting you.
Wow.
I'm going to try and be more careful in what I say, and I'm going to watch my words.
And did he?
Yeah, he did.
You just never got brought up to him.
And so once I brought it up, he was just like, wow, I had no idea I was doing that.
Right.
And that fixed the problem.
Wow.
But that's a very specific example, you know.
No, but this is an example. I mean, stereotypes and double standards happen all the time.
But I could have been in the opposite situation where he said, well, I don't feel, you know, if he did realize that he was doing it, and he could have said, well, I don't feel like I'm being unfair. So I was really lucky that
I see what you're saying, okay.
So if you're in that type of situation, you know, you have to handle it differently. You just have to get through it, you know.
Yeah.
But in my situation, it worked out perfectly. Because from then on, he was nice and respectful.
Right. The other situation mm-hmm. is more common.
Yeah.
Where men are specifically knowingly knowing what they're doing. Maybe not knowingly, but they've acted this way for so long. You're just another girl that they're going to condescend to, and that's just the way their mode of operation is.
Mm-hmm.
They're just condescending overall.
Right.
And I have found myself, when I've dealt with situations like this, usually pretty pissed off inside, but I'll always, first of all, not let it look like anybody's getting the best of me, because I won't let that happen.
Mm-hmm.
But I'll definitely deal with it. Like, I think all my armor comes up when that happens. I've got all types of things that, you know, I don't allow that to take place. I mean, it may take place, but I don't allow myself to be overpowered by that. And I've had a lot of those situations. Even recently had situations like that, you know, where guys are trying to overpower you, and they do it. Some guys do it for, there's all types of reasons. Cultural, like you said,
mm-hmm.
we're really naive to think that the whole world is just like the United States and Canada.
Yeah.
We're naive when we think that, because they are not.
Right.
Or people in our countries who are from those countries.
Yeah.
And I often, when I'm teaching clinics, I'm like, you're going to be working at bars, clubs, restaurants, corporate events, where the people who are running it are from a different nationality. As far as they're concerned, you don't have a voice. They don't even want to talk to you. They want to talk to your manager. They don't want to speak to a woman. I worked at one place, a club, where the guy was of a certain nationality, and he was older. He was like maybe close to his 60s. And I was the leader of the band, so it was me he always had to deal with. He could not look in my eyes, and I realized the situation. And now, this is a little bit of a cobble, but I had my husband. I'm like, you know what? Just go deal with him. You deal with it, okay? He's having a hard time. And he was polite to me, but I could tell he just had a hard... He just did not know how to deal with a woman.
Yeah.
He was used to dealing with guys who walked in with their bands, and the guys was always the one in charge. And when I would walk in, I came in confidently. I wasn't arrogant or anything, but he just did not know what to do. And, you know, and many times I would deal with it, and sometimes I would just get tired of it and just say, you know... Tony, I tell my husband, can you just handle getting the money tonight, whatever? Because I just get tired of it sometimes.
Yeah.
But not everybody has that luxury. You know, not everybody has a spouse working with them. So I think, and I don't always have my husband working with me.
Mm-hmm.
But I've learned as well to, sometimes I learn to be gracious with guys and realize this is their shortcoming, not mine.
Right.
Okay. Now, if they start to get rude or cross boundaries, then I'm all over it. But if somebody's just, they've never dealt with it, I'm not going to be condescending towards them. I know that, okay, you're of another generation. You're never going to change anyways. Younger men are, even younger men of different nationalities are better than different nationalities if they're older.
Yeah.
Right? Because they've been more experienced being around, you know, the modern world.
Right.
But it's something that we have to face. It's culture. It's the opposite. It's the male thing. And we have got to deal with it. And I think in dealing with it is part of it is being empowered as a person. Go, okay, maybe I'm not great right now as feeling comfortable around men, but I'm going to work on this until I become... I get to the place where men are going to respect me. I'm going to look in their eye. I'm not going to... It's all about body posture as well.
Yeah.
I will not sit there with my shoulders hunched and make it look like I'm being intimidated by men. I will look straight in your eyes and just let you deal with it. And a lot of times I have guys just look away because they... Some of these guys haven't had somebody.
Mm-hmm.
I don't get rude or become nasty, but I just don't allow myself to be overpowered by a man.
Yeah.
It's not always easy. And I'm better at it now. I'm a little older, so I've had a lot more experience. I think for younger women, they are going to face this on a regular thing.
Yeah.
It's part of the business. Just get over it and learn how to be empowered.
Right.
Learn how to be tough inside. If you got to go somewhere and cry, don't cry in front of a guy as much as possible.
That's so true.
Pinch yourself if you have to. Go and deal with your emotions apart, but do everything you can to keep a stone face and not to get emotional and not to let a guy know he's gotten under your skin. So the second he knows he's on your skin, he knows he's got you.
But I feel like if it gets to the point where he crossed the line...
Oh, I deal with it, absolutely.
Yeah, then you have a talk. Like I would
absolutely.
And you say, you're being inappropriate, you're being disrespectful.
Yes, I agree.
And the other thing I just wanted to add, in addition to posture, I think how you dress is so important. If you dress
absolutely.
Too sexy,
yes.
that gives the wrong message. And I think a lot
yes.
of women in the entertainment industry, they think, oh, they have to dress sexy, you know, because that's what they do. But you have to be classy and sexy. You have to be professional. You know, if you're doing a particular role or something,
that's a whole different story.
It's different. But if you're coming into a rehearsal or something wearing a very low-cut top or a very short skirt, that gives out a message, you know. And I'll notice, like, if I dress a certain way, I'll be treated differently by people.
I agree.
By men. If I walk down the street in New York City wearing, you know, a little cute tank top and short shorts and high heels and my hair all sexy, everyone will whistle at me, you know?
That's right.
If I'm wearing a business suit and nice, appropriate heels, my hair in a bun, and I walk down, I'm treated with so much more respect.
Yes.
You know? And it's not saying you have to dress like that all the time, but just be conscious of the image that you're giving out there. Because what you wear is who you are, in a way. People
right.
will treat you differently, and men will treat you differently just by that.
Well, that is such a great point, and I've talked often about that, and I think we can think as women that we are modern, we're whatever we want to think that we are, there is still something you stir up in a guy when you look a certain way.
Yeah.
He's a guy, and he is naturally has a conquering thing that takes over him.
Mm-hmm.
And when he sees you looking really hot and whatever, he's a guy, and this just rises up in him. I don't care how modern you are. You can be modern, think you're equal. He is. That is just still what a guy is like.
Right.
And like I said, I work with guys all the time, and I hear what the women say, and I hear what the guys say. They are not the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, too, because you bring up an excellent point, be aware of where you're going and who's going to be there. If
yeah.
you're going in an area where it's all married men, and they're with their wives, and you're trying to get be a business person, and you're in the arts, go looking trendy and cute, and just watch your cleavage, and watch your,
yeah.
your where your skirts are. You know, I've had situations where people are, like back in my back home, I'm dealing with my husband, and they know that he's married. And you've met Tony, he's a very secure guy, and I've had some girls just do some stuff, I'm like, oh my God, you know, and I feel a little embarrassed for them, but I know that they don't know, and so it's a different thing. They don't really know because they're young. They're like very young, and they do stuff that's kind of a little inappropriate. But they're trying to be cute, and they think they don't know any different. And as
yeah.
we get older, of course, like you said, you get to the part where you know where your role ends and where you're now. You're amongst people,
mm-hmm.
and why add extra attention if you're amongst a bunch of other women to just make your other people hate you?
Yeah.
I'm not saying, I mean, women can be catty, but why make it more catty than you need to be?
Exactly.
Why make it harder on yourself? Especially if you look nice and you're dressed up. Just be appropriate and know where you are. I've seen mm-hmm. girls go to, like, you know, band meetings, and the wives are there, and they're dressed like they just walked into a club. You're going to a band meeting, or out for dinner.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's, oh, let's go, let's, once a year we go for dinner, and all the wives are there, or the girlfriends, and the girl dresses like she's out to get ready to go on stage. that's not the time.
Exactly.
When the so it's really just using, because remember, that girlfriend or spouse may be very influential in that guy staying in the band. If they think, you're going away for the weekend and she's there,
mm-hmm.
why even do it?
Right, whereas if you portray a business look, they won't even think twice. So
right.
Think, she's very professional.
Right.
You know, I'm sure that she's great at what she does, because her art obviously speaks for herself.
Yes, I agree. And even, I mean, you can look nice, even not even business, but you can look cute and trendy and a little bit of sex appeal without going overboard.
Yeah.
You can, because, I mean, we're musicians and artists, so we have a different flair about us. And when we're performing and stuff, or when we're out and about, we can still look really nice and classy and whatever.
Yeah.
It's just, when you're performing, it's different than when you're out in everyday life.
Right.
And know who's going to be there. And have an idea. Yeah, have an idea of who's going to be in the audience, I mean, or who you're going to be with.
Mm-hmm.
And then cater how you're going to dress accordingly.
Right.
Just to, why create more problems than
mm-hmm.
necessary? Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
Great. Anything else to add? This is great. I didn't think we'd go on these topics, but these are really good topics because mm-hmm. they're very real to what's going on in the biz.
Mm-hmm. No, it's been great talking to you. I think you're so right on, you know. I feel like we're right on the same wavelength of our thoughts, you know.
Yeah.
So, thank you for this opportunity.
No, it's been great. It's been great. You brought some great points about friendships. That's very good.
Mm-hmm.
It's very easy to fall into those relationships if you get close to people and working with guys. Anything, any last words you'd like to say to...
I would say if you're a young musician, you know, out there trying to have a career, just focus on what's important. Focus on the music. Focus on practicing. Focus on getting better every day, because you're in it for that reason. You know, there was something, like we talked about, that inspired you.
Mm-hmm.
Some moment in your life that made you say, I want to do this for the rest of my life. So always remember that, and always focus on the music. Oh, don't get involved in stupid things or gossip, or just let all that go out the window. Focus on your career, and your art will take you to where you need to go. You don't need to do anything stupid to enhance your career. You know, be in the right place at the right time, but just always get better at your craft, so that no matter what, you can just say, I'm a great artist, and this is what I do. So that would
fantastic
be
my advice. It's very good. All right.
And just keep going also. Don't let anything stop you.
Get in your way.
Don't let anything stop. Because a lot of times, I think especially as women, like I mentioned, you can't see the forest from the trees. You get so involved in the particular situation that you're in that you don't see the big picture.
Mm-hmm.
You know? You don't see what's really going on in your life from afar. You just
That's
see
fabulous.
That one particular situation. You get so involved, and you can give up something so important to you just because of that stupid
right.
little situation.
Right.
Whereas if you step back and you see the whole thing, you realize one bad performance, that's nothing. That's
mm-hmm.
one little performance out of thousands I'm going to do my whole life.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
And just to add to that, because it's a really good point, some people give up their careers for a relationship, only to have that relationship not work out. And then they're 5 or 6 years down the road, and that window
mm-hmm.
may not... I'm not saying the window is completely closed, but sometimes it's a lot more difficult to get back.
Yeah.
You know, so that's another thing to say. I mean, nothing wrong with relationships, but you want to make sure if you're giving something up, you're giving it up for the right reason, or you're not completely letting go of all your dreams because you're caught up in the moment, like
right.
you said.
And I think, imagine yourself 5 years later, 10 years later, will you be happy with your choice? You know, imagine if you gave up your career for a guy, if, God forbid, 5 or 7 years later, you're not together anymore, would you still have made that decision? You know, are you still going to be happy with that choice? So I always say, look ahead and picture
mm-hmm.
yourself. Because a lot of times I'm faced with making decisions. A lot of times I'll get 2 contract offers at the same time, and I have to pick which company.
Right.
And what I do, my strategy, is looking ahead at the end of the contract, just like meditating about it and just picturing myself, where would I be happier when it's finished?
Mm-hmm.
In addition to, you know, which pays more and all that stuff.
Right.
Which is a better role. But if they're equal and you still can't make up your mind, I look ahead and I imagine, where will I be in a better place emotionally? Where will
right.
I be happier? You know?
Yeah.
So that's always a good tactic, no matter what, to always picture yourself ahead.
That's great advice. Very good advice. Well, thank you, Leandra.
Thank you.
Fabulous interview.
Yeah, thank you so much.
All right.
We'd like to thank Leandra Ram for this great interview. Check out her website, leandraram.com, for her debut single, remix, and music video to Dream Angel, filmed on location in Europe.
Thank you for joining us today for our Female Musician Online podcast. If you are interested in subscribing to our podcast to have it delivered automatically, please visit our website at femalemusiciononline.com and follow the subscription button. We appreciate your comments on iTunes in the podcast directories. If you have any topic ideas for future episodes or comments, we welcome your input. This is Vivian Clement saying goodbye and see you next time.